Welcome to episode 145 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts David, Andrew, and Jen. This week we read Injustice, Gods Among Us by Tom Taylor. And now, the cast begins.
Alright everybody, welcome to another Injust episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy and I'm hanging out with David.
Hello.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week we read Injustice, Gods Among Us, written by Tom Taylor and illustrated by Jeremy Rapik. We read issues 1-6 on Comixology. You know, I was reading this on Comixology and it seems like it was meant for digital first.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of agree with that. I can't really pinpoint why it does, but as I was reading it, I was like, this is really nice on my, I was reading it on my Android tablet, and I thought, this is kind of perfect.
Okay.
I know why. It's, at least the way it was formatted in the version I had, it's like perfectly sized for widescreen.
Yeah.
And there aren't many panels like up and down. It's all horizontal.
Okay, good. So yeah, I'm pretty sure it was like digital first, and I just did not notice that or think about it. We were talking about it before this, but yeah, I'm pretty sure it's digital. It was digital only at first, and then maybe adaptive reprint. I think, I don't know. So this is the last comic in our series of video game comics. And I know if you just read this one and you didn't know it was a video game comic, it might not feel like it. And that's because it's a comic for a DC fighting game. So the game, like, you can pick like Wonder Woman versus Superman, Harley Quinn versus, you know, Green Arrow or whatever. Black Adam, perfect. Yeah. And I think DC felt like they had to have a comic that explained how this is a thing that would occur. Like, why would Superman fight Wonder Woman? And they wanted to create this alternate storyline to justify these events that happen in the game, justify you have these heroes fighting each other. So they made Injustice Gods Among Us, the comic book, to go along with the video game. So we'll get to that later, I think, the whole video game comic discussion and how it relates to this one. But right now, I just want to ask, what did you guys think about this comic? This is kind of something special.
Yeah, special is one way to put it.
Yeah.
Whew. They just jumped right into it.
This was so weird to read because I feel like the dialogue was really well written and then the story wasn't. Like, that plot was crazy. And you can kind of tell in the context of this was made as a supplement to a video game,
yeah.
That this was, like, just meant to be a way to get everyone to fight each other. It was so crazy and so brutal. I don't even know how I feel about it.
You know, I think there are enough little bits of this that make me like it, that I'm on the side that I think better of it than bad of it. But just ever so slightly. Either way, I think we can all agree it's pretty entertaining, at least.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is a pretty entertaining comic, whether or not you care about the video game or anything like that. It seems like for a couple of years, DC has put the kibosh on the idea of... Well, for a while there, they had a kibosh on the idea of alternate universes. They want everything to fit into their singular universe. And then they created New 52. Not New 52, 52. And then they had the multiverse again. And so it's like more of a recent thing almost for them to want to have alternate realities. And it's so interesting to read these alternate realities. Like the what if Lois Lane died. And not only what if Lois Lane died, but what if this is how it happened?
Do you think this is how it would have happened?
You know, it's tough. I think this is, like you say, it's a little bit ridiculous. It's a little bit just thrown straight into it. But I also agree with the Joker and how he says, I got bored of losing. And so I wanted to try something different, something easier. And my God, this was easy. I think Superman would be real easy for Joker to fuck with. Like, real easy. So, I kind of, yes, kind of no, I don't know. I'm so torn on this comic.
I kind of, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, it's a very comics thing to be like, they put kryptonite in Scarecrow gas and then it made Superman crazy. But at the same time, we've seen Batman fall prey to this, and, like, I don't know. It just seems really strange that Superman just completely lost his grip on reality to the point where he killed Lois and his unborn child.
Well, I mean,
not completely.
Scarecrow's gas shows you what you fear the most, right? And the one thing that has killed him in the past is Doomsday, so why wouldn't he immediately try to kick the crap out of Doomsday? I mean, it seems legit. I mean, his reaction to Doomsday.
Yeah, the reaction. I don't. There is just something about the plot that, I guess, left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah. Well, it's as much as that stuff is interesting, the other thing that lets you down is, like, the whole first, what, 4 or 5 pages of this where Clark is all happy and Lois is pregnant. I'm sitting there thinking, oh man, there's a whopper of a refrigerator coming up. I know it's coming. She gonna die. Like, there's no way this is going good. There's no way. So, like, on the one hand, it's fun and interesting to have the Joker match against Superman in the way that he does, and have it manifest like this. And the comic even sets a baseline for it by Clark, or by Bruce telling Clark, like, I've only ever seen you nervous one other time, and that was Doomsday. So it's like, well, you put Scarecrow grass in him, and Clark's either going to hallucinate Doomsday or a room full of giant babies, apparently. You know? So it's like 50-50 shot, he goes crazy and kills Lois. Joker's going to take that and see what the hell happens. Like, that whole thing is interesting, but the whole first 4 or 5 pages feels just like, not uninspired, it's just cliche almost for comics. I think cliche is a decent word? I don't know.
Yeah. That seems about right. It's just, we've seen it before. You know, like, great thing happens, now need to worry about it.
Yeah. And it happens so much, it's transcended a trope. It has its own phrase specific to comic books.
Yeah, I just, What did you think about the fact that they made her pregnant before she died? Was that more impactful, or was it just adding to the trope?
I think it just added on. I was just going to say, I think before, you know, I knew, I like, you go into this knowing somebody's got to go batshit crazy because this is a comic book to rationalize them fighting each other. So something has to happen. You know it's coming. And as soon as the pregnancy thing happens, I'm like, oh, now I know who it's going to happen to. Now I know, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know what's going to happen.
I mean, this is a pretty dire situation, and I'm not trying to, like, put it down. But this kind of reminds me of the whole Hal Jordan turning evil, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a villain, Mongol, and Cyborg Superman destroyed Coast City, and it made Green Lantern flip the fuck out, so much so that he started fighting the superheroes. I mean, he basically destroys Oa also, right?
Yeah. He pretty much dismantles the core, goes to Oa, destroys the battery to get Sinestro out of it, and then kills Sinestro.
Mm-hmm.
Which results in the death of most of the Guardians.
Now, I think this seems...
Spoilers.
Yeah. This seems a little more personal than Coast City being destroyed.
Because after that, what's her name? Carol? Carol was still alive.
Right. Carol Ferris is still alive. Here, I mean, Metropolis gets blown up too, but...
But that's almost secondary.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously Lois and the baby die, and let's not forget that Jimmy Olsen got shot in the face.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I hated that.
Yeah, so, that was pretty rough too.
What was the line? Looks like I got some Jimmy on my shoe.
Yeah.
Entertaining is the good word to use.
So I think David kind of called out something important there, and it's when Hal Jordan went crazy, it was due to his failing as a hero. But here, this is more like Superman's failing as Clark Kent, as a man. And for some reason, that takes it a little out of the trope for me and makes it feel less believable because his wife died in such strange circumstances. I think if it was like he failed as Superman the hero and Lois died, I'd be more accepting, but it feels, because it's personal, I think that's why it bothers me. Which, I mean, that's probably just my reaction, but it's kind of a really interesting distinction.
See, I don't know, I'm kind of the opposite. I think the Hal Jordan thing is the exception to the rule. So often we see people fail, in comics at least, we see people fail as a man, and that's, I think, supposed to make them more relatable. And of course, the prime example is Kyle Rayner. when his girlfriend gets stuffed in the fridge. Like, I know I keep using that same example, but it's because it's a great example. And in that case, he doesn't fail as a hero. I mean, he just got the damn ring. He doesn't even know how to be a hero, really. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of cases where it's the failing as a man, and I think that's supposed to make it more relatable. I don't, like, more personal, more intimate for the reader. The problem is that his then resolution is completely not that. Like, I can relate to Kyle Rayner going apeshit crazy and beating somebody up. I can't relate to Superman feeling that pain, going apeshit, racing halfway across the world, killing the guy who killed his wife, and then installing a military dictatorship.
See, like, I was trying to think...
Like, it's relatable, like, and then it's not.
Like, I was comparing this... I mean, the first thing that came to my mind when I saw this was the Hal Jordan thing. And I thought, you know, I think if Joker had just blown up Metropolis, it wouldn't have been this bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he would have, like you said, become a tyrant. Which is so fucking weird, because it's like backwards, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and part of that, part, because Superman's had to deal with that before, right? I mean, we can say Coast City was Hal's city, and when it got destroyed, that was Hal's failure. But, I mean, yes, it's his city, but it was a pair of Superman's arch nemeses that did it.
Right.
Like, that's also a failing of Superman. Superman let that happen to a certain degree, you know? And, like, There's been multiple times where Superman's enemies have rampaged and killed tons of people. You know they have to have. How many people do you think Darkseid has killed? You know? What about Doomsday? You know, that's happened before. I think that you have to take somebody like Lois. It couldn't even just be Jimmy. If it was just Jimmy, he wouldn't have had that reaction.
No. Although... I wonder if he would have if it had been Metropolis. I wonder if we're supposed to see that parallel to Hal Jordan in that way.
You know, I think Metropolis is more to justify the reaction of everybody else. You know?
Yeah, I think because at being the Justice League, they all have a connection to Metropolis. The only person that had a connection to Coast City was Superman. I mean, Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe if Gotham City had been the city that was blown up, it would have had a similar impact as Metropolis.
No, they all abandoned it in No Man's Land.
Yeah. But Gotham City is also, I was going to say, Gotham City is kind of a shithole compared to Metropolis. Metropolis, isn't it called the City of the Future?
Yes. City of Tomorrow,
yeah.
I think.
Tomorrow.
So it has something like, it represents a hope. Right, it's the good city.
Yeah.
But even still, I don't think that just the destruction of Metropolis would drive Superman to where this leads him. And it's specifically because of Lois.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think that Lois is what drives Superman to go crazy. I think that the destruction of Metropolis is going to polarize everyone else in this comic and the reader in that there's a reporter at the beginning, I think it was the last issue, the second to last, that says, "Yesterday, the sense of safety we once felt in our homes, at our jobs, and our schools was shattered." right? Like, that statement will justify whatever Batman does. You know, that statement will justify whatever anybody who sides with Superman does. Like, that justifies Wonder Woman's actions, right? Wonder Woman wouldn't be justified installing a military dictatorship if just Lois got killed. Superheroes, girlfriends, wives, husbands, boyfriends die all the time in comics. All the time.
Yep.
Right? And just because it's Superman's, that won't let other people side with him. What lets people side with him is Metropolis getting blown the fuck up.
Well, I mean, we didn't read past issue 6.
No, me either. I'm just...
But I don't think... Obviously, not everyone sides with him. I mean, yeah. Batman's got a beef with the situation.
Ollie doesn't, that's for sure.
But if everyone sided with Superman, then we wouldn't have the game either, right? Because everyone would think it was okay to be a military dictatorship or basically, you know, just it's not even military. Oh, I guess we did see Superman's, like, army.
Yeah, at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But so there's a lot more to this because obviously not everyone agrees. Do I think probably Wonder Woman would side with Superman? I feel like she's got that militaristic streak in her being an Amazon and stuff. But obviously not everyone does. Batman doesn't. So I don't know if I can completely agree with the statement that the destruction of Metropolis rallies everyone to Superman's cause.
Well, no. You know? Yeah, not rallies, but it's like, that's polarizing. I don't think anybody gets behind Clark murdering the Joker. I don't think anybody gets behind that. Right? But I think some people can get behind him going to Biala and taking out their president.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman certainly does.
Yeah. You know?
She's like, if you want to do it, I got your back, but let's do it right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people like Oliver Queen would definitely say, that ain't right, buddy. You are a terrible person for doing that. That's definitely what Ollie would say. Ollie's all about the system and respecting the will of the governments and other people.
But Ollie's also, he's super liberal.
Yes.
So I think, for both what you said and the point about him being liberal, he would definitely be against a dictatorship of any kind.
Yeah, and that's regardless of Metropolis getting blown up. That's
right.
I'm sure Ollie would see that as a tragedy, but that doesn't justify taking away the rights of people, the rights of individuals.
Definitely.
And I think that destruction is what lets you, as a reader, pick a side, and what lets the heroes pick a side as well. So speaking of Oliver Queen, can we just talk about that with him and Harley?
So that's like the best part of this comic.
It's absolutely the best.
Yes.
Particularly the panel where she asks him, why does he need a boxing glove arrow?
Yes.
That's like one of the best panels I've ever had, I've experienced in comics. Because it's just like, it's the question that I think anybody would ask him. Why do you need a boxing glove arrow?
And it makes perfect sense in his answer, because sometimes I want to punch somebody that's really far away. It makes perfect sense to her. And I'm like, yeah, that does kind of make sense. My favorite part of that interaction was when she pulls out the gun and he shoots it with an arrow and plugs it. And she goes, holy shit, do that again.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
It's like, this is so cool, dude. You're awesome. It's like she's a Green Arrow fan and she didn't even know it. Well, I guess it makes sense. They're on opposite coasts, right? Gotham's on the East Coast and Star City's on the West. Makes sense they wouldn't run into each other that much.
Yeah.
It's just their interaction was so funny.
I really love the fake mustache thing where she's like, no one should ever have to justify their fake mustache. And then she uses it to make him laugh to make her feel better about the Joker dying. And it's just like such a good interaction.
Yeah.
It really humanizes both of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important thing the setting that this game is in.
Yeah.
Because they are the humans for the most part.
And this comic is about to get full of monsters.
Batman, but I think Batman is
he's bigger than
a step above a normal human for sure.
Yeah.
That's like calling Iron Man human. I mean, yeah, he is, but nah.
Not the same.
Yeah, not really. He's not an average Joe. Ollie's an average Joe.
And certainly Harley is, too. I mean, she's a little bit cuckoo, but obviously she's not crazy on the same level as as the Joker, right?
Yeah. Oh, and the other interaction that got me was when she was like, why does it make sense to call it the Arrow Cave? Arrows don't. That whole interaction was genius, too. I think I love the whole part with them together.
Yeah.
It was adorable. Heartwarming. And it's
she's like, cause... why don't you call it the Quiver? And he's like, that is actually better.
It's so weird that in this comic that feels so forced and so artificial that interaction of all interactions in this would feel so organic. It stands out so much.
I'm looking at that section again, and one of the things that really, really makes this whole interaction believable is the artwork. Like the facial expressions and stuff.
Yeah.
Bruno Redondo's pencil work is like really, really good. Like Harley is very expressive. And like she goes through many different moods in just this issue, and he does an excellent job.
Yeah, and you know what else that really helped me buy their instant bond together? I don't know who decided that this was how it was going to be. Might have been Tom Taylor, the writer. I don't know. But when Harley explains her love for the Joker and says, sometimes you know they'll hurt you over and over and over again, but you can't leave them because you know leaving them would only hurt more. Right? Mm-hmm. And then he said, and when she's explaining them, I'm like, oh my God, Black Canary.
Yeah, and like, then on the very next page, he says, I mean, Ollie gives a slightly smart-ass remark, but he says the three of the last four women he's been with were like that.
He says, yeah, I know exactly what that's like. On both sides, he does. And it's that, like, that instantly, that creates instant buy-in for me with their relationship, their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the reasons that this interaction was so appealing is just that these characters are so often kind of put off to the side as goofy. Ollie is super campy, and Harley is really meant to be like kind of comic relief. And here they're acting so very human, and they're kind of acting out a really painful scene. You know, it's not ending with Green Arrow laughing because anything's actually funny. He's laughing because Harley has gotten him to do so. And it's because she's grieving so horribly. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's really nice to see characters who are so often just put off on the sidelines act like really fleshed out characters. And I think that's what also added the impact. I mean, it was certainly well written, but it was those two specific people in that conversation that I think really made it like gold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that Tom Taylor does pretty good in this comic when he does it. The other example is in the beginning when Clark and Lois are in bed and Clark wakes up when he hears the second heartbeat. And then they have the conversation and Lois Lane gets his attention by throwing a fucking book at him. And he doesn't move at all. It just thuds him in the side of the head and he just turns his head a little bit. And that moment's perfect because, yeah, what the hell is a book going to do to Clark Kent, fucking Superman, right? His head won't even move. And he's like, did you just fucking throw a book at me? And she's like, yeah, you're Superman. I should get to throw hard shit at you every once in a while when I'm frustrated. Like, that moment, that interaction was great and felt really organic in that moment. And I think, like, it works to humanize the ridiculous characters and also works to humanize the godlike characters. And I think that's maybe kind of where you're supposed to buy into Superman before he becomes a monster in this comic. Or at least where you're supposed to buy into Lois Lane and their relationship as being something that's real and actually existing. And then you can kind of relate to the loss or that stuff. I had a point and then it petered right out.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, we don't like, there's a lot of times when we read comics that we would consider good ones, and they don't have these kinds of interactions in them that are like genuine.
Yeah.
I think that when Superman is off duty and he's just hanging out with Lois and she's not in reporter mode, that they probably would have normal interactions like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you don't come to think of it, most of the characters in here do get those little moments. I mean, Batman kind of gets it when he smiles a little bit, when he catches Clark off guard, and he's actually proud of Clark for becoming a father, you know? Yeah. Or that other moment where Flash is carrying him, and he says, just yes. Run fast enough that nobody can see, you know?
And then the Joker mocks him for it afterwards, and he gets yes. really pissed.
Yeah. And then the other moment, like, I think I wrote in here that Flash always gets the coolest costume transitions. Like, when they're radioing the entire JLA, Flash is just laying on the couch, eating a fucking bag of chips, and then suddenly, before the sentence is over, he's in Metropolis standing next to Batman. Like, that transition is cool, but I love the idea of Flash just chilling in his boxers on a couch, eating a bag of chips. You know? Like, most of these heroes get that little humanizing moment. I think the only one that doesn't get it is Joker.
And I think that's probably done on purpose, because he is clearly the monster in this comic.
Yeah. But that's something I think was done really, really well in this comic. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this alternate universe. I mean, you talked about Flash getting the coolest costume transition, but what did you guys think of this universe?
I think it's hard for me to say. I don't think I've read enough of it to be able to give a really good judgment of this alternate setting for the Justice League. I mean, it's essentially Justice League, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, what I've seen so far, and let me preface this by saying, going into this, I thought I was gonna just be like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever read, because I felt like I that's a lot of what I had seen online about this.
Yeah.
But I'm intrigued by it. And now it kind of makes sense why this comic, which is a tie-in to a video game, is on its 30th issue, or it's on like, I think 29 came out last week or something. And so they're doing something right here, you know. And on top of all of that, it's not only has it intrigued me to read more of the comics, but I actually want to play the video game now.
Right? Just fired up. I just want to play just a little bit, see how ridiculous it is. Because if it has the same tone as this, I would love it, where it's like, where it would be suddenly really brutal and then suddenly really heartwarming and funny, or have like little moments and snippets in it. But I thought it was interesting the way that this alternate universe uses the chance to create new art for the characters to give you subtle hints for what's going to happen. So like, Wonder Woman is way more guarded and aggressive in this comic, both in personality and in appearance. I mean, aside from the superficial fact that she has pants, right? The very first time you see her, she's flying along and she has a shield and a sword on her back. She's rolling around with her battle gear, which we only see in continuity when she's going in for what she knows is going to be a major fight. Like, she's just casually flying around with it here. And I think a lot of these characters, they're subtle little things that make them more in the bent that they are character-wise in normal continuity in this, that's reflected in their costume. Like, Ollie is more secretive, so in this he's wearing the hood, you know? And maybe that's kind of tying to Arrow, I don't know, whatever. But, like, the hood, more secretive, dark, and he is more secretive. The little Arrow cave, the quiver, is there specifically lined in lead so that Superman cannot look into it. You know, and continuity Ollie might have something like that, but I don't think it would be done in quite this way, per se. And so I think it's really neat that this alternate universe slants that direction.
Yeah, it's definitely I think they're going for a darker setting. I mean, and obviously with Superman in charge, it's kind of like, you know, the Red Sun to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't seen much of it here except for that Batman's
flash forward.
Batman's afraid, and there's an army that is under Superman. But yeah, it reminds me a little bit of, what I've seen so far reminds me of Red Sun.
Yeah.
And I think that's, Red Sun's a great comic, so this has some potential to do something interesting, right?
Mm-hmm. So the only question I have about this alternate universe, that Green Lantern, is that Hal or Kyle?
I want to say Kyle.
See, I get what you're saying, where it looks like Kyle, but I'm assuming that it's Hal.
See, I was so...
I think he has Hal's costume.
Yeah, he has Hal's Green Lantern costume. I went through it completely assuming it was Hal, because everybody else in here, I mean, it's not Dick Grayson as Batman, it's not Mon-El as Superman, it's not, you know, none of these other people are the legacy versions of themselves. They're all the original. So I went into it, like, just understanding that it was Hal, because it's Hal's costume. But then, when Superman takes the ring off, he's, like, wearing blue jeans, sneakers, and a sweater. And I don't remember ever seeing Hal Jordan wear a sweater. Like, not just a sweater, like a hoodie.
He does have, like, black hair, too.
The black hair is what made me think it was Kyle. And the cut, too. It's kind of like that parted 90s cut that he had for so long.
Yeah, but I don't think aside from the first issue of his appearance, Kyle ever wore that costume. It's just, it's, I don't know. It makes
definitely
sure that,
Hal's costume.
Yeah, it makes for the little moment of when I got there. It's not such a big deal, but when I got there, I was like, wait, who is this? And then I realized that the Green Lantern character was written so generically, it could be either one.
Yeah.
Which kind of system. And I might
Kyle
not have noticed.
Kyle and Hal are pretty similar in their everything.
In a lot of ways, yeah. But in a lot of ways, they're not. And I think if you want to invest the time in the character, then you can get to the point where they're really, really not. But
I think
comic, it was superfluous.
Like, yeah, superficially, they're close enough as compared to, like, Hal and Guy or Hal and Jon Stewart. And I don't mean because of the color of their skin or red hair. But, like, their
personalities are drastically different.
Yeah.
I mean, Hal is a cocky test pilot, whereas Jon Stewart was a fucking Marine. He goes through the Corps like it's the Marines, like he's a soldier, you know, whereas Hal sees himself as a cop, and that comes out in their character really distinctly.
I guess what I'm trying to say, as of the four, or I guess five now, Earth, Green Lanterns, Kyle and Hal are the closest.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta read about that new one. He's,
Simon Baz. Yeah, he's American, but I'm not sure where he's, like, geographically from, but I think he is he's a Muslim.
That's fucking awesome. I love that. I love that so much.
He's pretty interesting. I feel like I'm a little behind on Green Lantern maybe, but he's in Justice League of America too. He's on that team. So.
Okay. Hmm. Yeah, I just, when you mentioned the fifth one, I was like, oh yeah, that guy. I really want to read that guy. But
yeah,
I hate the new 52.
There's actually, we're going to get a little sidetrack here. There's a scene where he has a gun on him. Like, he has an actual gun, not a Green Lantern construct gun. And his ring's, like, out of energy or something. And I think Sinestro or somebody asks him, why bother when you have the ring? And then he ends up shooting Sinestro.
Oh,
not to, like, kill him.
Yeah.
He's like, that's why.
What?
He's an interesting character. I think he has potential. But like I said, I haven't read much about him since they did that War of Light.
Not War of Light.
The first Lantern or whatever. The last Green Lantern arc.
Yeah,
the thing Geoff Johns did at the end before that he left the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, but. Okay, wait. So speaking of Arabic, I just want to say there's one scene that really stuck out to me. It should just be, even, I think, a panel. When the kid in Biala is talking to Superman, and Superman says, I'm sorry I don't speak Arabic, but I should learn. You know, like, that scene was like, yeah, what the fuck, Superman? Why don't you speak Arabic? Like, you protect, I mean, more than anybody else in the DC Universe, you protect the entire world. Let alone the fact that you have a super brain. You could learn a language probably overnight. The only person who might be able to learn it faster than you would be the Flash. Because he can, like, what was it, Impulse had read the entire Library of Congress, like, in 2 days? You know, but that's just rote memorization. Like, Superman has a super brain in terms of understanding as well. So it's like, why don't you speak Arabic? And that little scene to me was like, that to me tied in how Superman was looking at this problem. He wasn't looking at it as, I need to install a dictatorship. He was looking at it as, I need to protect everyone. And I haven't been doing it. and me's not speaking this language is small, little example of how I have been failing everybody outside of America, or failing everybody outside of what I've been protecting. And that little scene, like, just put in my head how Superman was making it personal for every single living person on the planet. All of a sudden, he made it all his responsibility. And then it was completely, completely flipped when he takes the president of Viola with him. When Wonder Woman says, bro, you need to shave. And he flies off with the shirtless Bialan president in his hand. And then he gets to the UN shaved with the shirtless president still in his hand. And then just imagine him taking him back to his apartment, saying, sit on the couch and don't leave while I go shave. And then grabbing him and going to the UN.
It's like, what's she going to do when Superman kidnaps you? You don't really have a choice.
Yeah, you're not going to run. What are you going to do? It's just so funny that... like, what did he do with the president in the meantime? I really want to see those panels.
I find it weird that Superman, like, ripped off his shirt and was like, you don't deserve to be president or have a shirt. And then he never gave him another one. But, you know, the shirt thing just, like, weirded me out.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, they obviously must have gone somewhere so he could shave. Why don't you, like, say, bro, sorry for ripping off your shirt. Borrow one of mine before we go to the fucking UN and throw you in front of the entire world on camera. It just seems so weird. Never mind the amount of time it would take Wonder Woman to call a meeting of the UN, right? To get all of the delegates into that building. It's not like he just flew there and it happened. They must have sat around waiting somewhere for a while. Nobody got him a shirt?
Maybe in this alternate universe there is no bureaucracy.
Maybe. Maybe they're all just hanging around in the UN building waiting
for him to call. Yeah, maybe Superman abolished it and just makes them live there now. That was his first act as president of the world.
It's just, it's such a small, stupid thing, but it stood out when I was reading it, and it made me laugh really, really hard. Probably harder than I should have at it. So let's talk about this as a video game comic. Like you mentioned, David, this has gone for 30-something issues now. Like, this, I think, has clearly outlived maybe what it was intended to be. Because the video game's been out for a while. I mean, they were teasing this video game at Comic-Con a year ago.
Yeah, you know? It came out a few months ago, I think. Like, or maybe 6 months ago.
I'm fairly sure that this has gone longer than it was supposed to.
Well, there's 29 issues on Comixology.
Okay. So obviously it's doing something, not just right, but something more than it was intended to as a video game tie-in comic.
I mean, who knows? Well, there's so many characters in the game that at some point they get, I guess they have to cover everyone, right? Because, I mean, it has Aquaman, it has Captain Marvel and Black Adam, it has Lex Luthor, it has a bunch of villains, too. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, because even if Lex isn't in the video game, I'm really interested about what he's doing right now, because if he was in Metropolis? Because LexCorp is based in Metropolis. His power base is decimated.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm scrolling through the purchase page on Comixology, and this comic has a solid 4.5 stars out of 5 through its entire run. There's a couple that are 4, and there's a couple that are a 5, but this is... people like this. And it's not just, like... you know, it's not just, like, a few people rating. It's, like, most of these have about 1,000 people rating them.
Damn.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's... as a video game comic, I mean... I haven't played the game. Have either of you guys played the video game?
No.
Not yet.
So, for me, this doesn't even feel like something that's necessary. You know? Like, couldn't you just put in a clip scene?
Well, they had the Mortal Kombat versus DC also.
Yeah.
And that didn't have a tie-in comic, as far as I know.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that was all explained in a cutscene before the game booted up.
Yeah, I mean, so my roommate has actually played this game, I think all the way through, like, through the story mode and such. And I asked him about the comic, or the story before I read it, and he told me what happens. And his summary was the exact same thing that we read here. So I can't imagine what's extra in it. I'm sure the comic provides more background, but I don't know what the game, you know, doesn't show you that the comic does, per se. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know where the overlap lies. That's what I mean.
Yeah, well, you know what? This might even be an example of what I have been looking for in superhero comics for a long time, where it's just a comic book adaptation of the story from the video game. Sorry, this is superhero comics, video game comics. In that, like, I really, really want to play... I don't know. I really want to play Borderlands 2. But I feel like I need to finish playing Borderlands 1. And I know Borderlands 2 opens with a cutscene and explains what happens in it, but I own the game and I feel like I should play through the story. If I could fucking read a comic book that tells me the storyline, the main story ideas of the first Borderlands, I would love that. Or, like, fucking Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, right? That's a phenomenal game, and I know it is, but it's 10 years old, and I tried playing it, and it just does not age very well for me. And I couldn't bring myself to keep playing it. But if I could read a comic book that tells me the things that happen in that video game, I would love it. And I feel like if that's what this comic is doing, then I should give it more props than I thought. Because I don't have a deep-seated need to play Injustice Gods Among Us. But I think it's cool that they're fleshing out an entire alternate universe to do it. And I kind of want to know what that alternate universe looks like without having to go buy the game and play the game.
Yeah, I agree with that, because, I don't know, I've basically been told that the plot of the game is terrible, and while my roommate and I have different opinions on things in general, like, I didn't think this comic was horrible. I thought it was shaky in parts, but it wasn't this, like, absurd mess. So I'm wondering if the game's, like, missing something, and if I'm really just gaining a lot more from having a comic. And I also sympathize with the, you know, wish that you could just absorb these stories in other media. Like, I would play Bioshock Infinite much sooner, yes, before it goes on sale, if I could stomach playing Bioshock 1 and 2, but the camera in those gives me, like, such bad nausea, I can't, so it's like, well, I don't feel compelled, because I don't really know that much about the story of Rapture and what happens. So, like, if I could read it, that'd be so great. So, this is a really nice and, I'd say, novel thing to just, like, give you the story plus a little extra.
Yeah. Bioshock is a great example, because I've heard from multiple people that Bioshock is probably the best representation of narrative storytelling in a comic, narrative storytelling in a video game ever done, ever. And I feel like I can't play it because I haven't played Bioshock 1 and 2. But I would fucking go buy a pair of graphic novels and read those. That'd be cheaper, it'd be faster, it would save me the time. I know Bioshock 1 and 2 are good games, but they don't have quite the insanely good reviews that Infinite does. And I want to play Infinite, but I feel like there's this hurdle for me to get over. And if I could just read a comic book, I would love that so much.
So basically what we want are more comics. Always. Always more comics. Always a good thing.
Yeah. Pretty much. So you ready to get down to rate this one?
Should we talk about the art?
Oh, yes. Yes, we should. What about the art, Jen?
I really liked it. I enjoyed... Like, it was clearly digital, but I really liked the coloring. I thought the pencil work was just superb. You guys mentioned earlier, like, the facial expressions were really strong. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually... usually I'm kind of like, the art's neat. This one, even though there weren't really too many frame transitions, which is a thing I tend to really look at and look for, I felt like this was really appealing art, and I thought it was pleasant to look at, and it added something to my reading experience. So I was quite happy with it.
Hmm. Yeah, I liked it. I really like the costume design. Like I said, yeah. I think it's really nice that the costume design gives subtle hints about how the character is different. With the example of Wonder Woman I gave earlier. And honestly, you know, this costume for Superman I like way better than the New 52 costume.
Yeah.
The way that the the collar comes up but has like a little piping on the edge, and like the cape connects to the S logo. It just looks cool. It looks cooler than the new 52 one does.
It looks more badass for some reason.
Yeah. That's really all I have to say about the art. Font of intellectualism tonight. The piping on the collar is great. So you guys want to rate it?
Sure.
All right, Jen, you get to go first.
Okay. Oh no, not okay. I don't know. Okay. See, this is me like trying to come up with a rating because I actually hadn't been thinking about it this whole time we were talking. Sometimes I know like from way before the episode, like days ahead, what I'm gonna give it. And this one, I feel really like I've been flip flopping. I'm gonna go ahead and say a 3 because when I started reading this, I was kind of like, this plot's real dumb. But the more we talked about it, the more I realized that it wasn't that different from some other very tropey comic plots that we've read that I've enjoyed. And the minute detail, like the execution of this silly plot, was really good. The entirety of issue 5 was just so strong. That's the one with Harley Quinn and Green Arrow. Like, I loved that. That was so well written. I still have, like, a bit of incredulity about Superman killing Lois Lane. There's something about that that just rubs me the wrong way. Like, somewhere in my nerd brain, my lizard nerd brain, I'm like, that shouldn't be possible. Even though, why wouldn't it be? There's no logical reason that it couldn't be. So I think that's just, like, I don't know, fan anger, even though I don't even like Superman. I guess I have these impressions of what he should be all about and what he should never do. So that's probably it. But I enjoyed this. I thought it looked nice. My only complaint, well, not my only complaint because I am only giving it a 3, but a big complaint was that it was short because, sure.
These issues,
you know,
feel short.
It was half length, basically. It was 24 pages, I think, but it was in 2-page spreads. So it made it like a 12-page comic, something along those lines. It was very short. I wish the issues were longer, but at the same time, I realize that they're also tie-ins, so, you know, the story is being told elsewhere. And I don't know, I guess the thing that just keeps it from getting higher than a 3, or just a bit above average, is that I still don't know where the plot's going to go, and I have serious doubts about Superman's crazy dictatorship. I'm not sure I'm going to like that, so... 3.
Okay. All right, David, you go next.
Okay, I'm gonna give this a 3.5. I agree with what Jen said. I think the reason I'm gonna bump it up half a point is because I was pleasantly surprised by this comic. I had very low expectations for it going into it, and I think I kind of made a joke about it in the very first time we mentioned we were gonna do a video game comics arc. But honestly, this comic, you know, it's not the best thing I've ever read, but it's certainly not even close to the worst. And I think it succeeds in one thing that any medium, entertainment medium, should do. And I want to continue reading it.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm glad I didn't buy it in the store now. I was going to look for the issues when I was in the comic book store yesterday, but I decided to buy it on Comixology. And the format, like we said at the very beginning, this format is perfect for digital. I think it seems, Jen said it seems like it was meant for digital. And the price is good. I mean, it's 99 cents an issue. I will definitely be buying more of this. But like I said, I was pleasantly surprised by the comic overall. The storyline was, so far, been pretty good. I like some of the costume redesigns pretty well. I don't even know if that made sense.
It's
I just
late.
Lost my train of thought there. But and I thought the pencil work was really good. It reminded me of something like Justice League International, where the artist really knows how to show expressions. And if you only read, I think it's issue 4, the one with Harley and Green Arrow, You can. That's just like the facial expressions were just so good, and you can see the roller coaster of emotions that Harley is going through here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really good. I mean, I like this comic a lot, and I'm not saying everyone should go out and read it, but it's pretty. You know, it's an interesting take on the Justice League, at least from these six issues. And I mean, it's gone to 20. It's at 29 now, so that says something about the comic. I mean, the publishers don't have a problem canceling a book pretty quick if it does terribly. But yeah, so 3.5. I think I gave it more. The review made I just said makes it sound more like a, you know, higher than a 3.5. But I'm gonna stick with 3.5.
I'm gonna go ahead and put a 3 on this one for me, because this was like you, David. This caught me by surprise with how entertaining it was and how fun it was to read. But there were some parts of it that were just difficult. You know, like Lois throwing the book, that's great. But then when, like, she's pregnant, made me roll my eyes. Because I knew going into this that something terrible was going to happen that would make Superman go crazy. So as soon as she's pregnant, I roll my eyes because not only do I know who's going to get killed, but it's like, really? You got to make her pregnant, too? Like, it's not just enough to kill her? Like, kill her and the... it was just that little bit of, really, buddy, really? And that kind of thing came up a couple times, that feeling. But I'm going to sway it mostly in positive because it was really entertaining. And, I love the interaction with Harley and Ollie. And, like you, David, I want to keep reading this to see what happens with them. Like, I want to see how their friendship evolves. I want to see what happens when Lex Luthor shows up. How did this decimation of Metropolis affect him? I want to keep reading this. And I think once it kind of got away from the thing that made it the video game, and that the video game plot was Superman kills Lois on accident, Metropolis blows up, the heroes polarize, and now they have an excuse to fight each other. That's the first 3.5 issues. The rest of these six issues were better than that. But it's all in this first six. So I'm giving these first six issues a 3. But I get the feeling if I read the next six, I would want to rate it higher. Because I think the further and further it gets from that story that was handed down from on high, I think it's going to get better. So I 3 with the caveat that it's really entertaining, and I'm definitely going to read some more of this. So speaking of reading some more, next week we're going to read From Hell, which is a graphic novel from 1989 written by Alan Moore and art by Eddie Campbell. And we picked this one because a listener requested it. A listener requested it on our Facebook page. See, guys, this is how easy it is to get us to be your dancing puppet monkeys. You just post something on Facebook and suddenly we read it for you. It's easy. Please, please do it more. Please, we like you guys. Yay. So next week, From Hell, graphic novel, 1989, Alan Moore. It's been a while since we've read Alan Moore, hasn't it?
Yeah, quite a while.
Since maybe our Alan Moore arc.
Which is like our fourth or fifth arc.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since we read Alan Moore, so I'm excited to go back to Crazy Snake God. It's going to be fun, because we've gone back to the other crazy guy, Grant Morrison, a couple times, but Alan Moore is pretty crazy too, so I'm happy to go back to that well. If you want to find out what we have coming up after that, if you want to go listen to those old Alan Moore episodes, go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button, future shows, past shows. There's all kinds of buttons over there on the right. Just hit them. Click around. See, there's episodes of things. Read them. They're entertaining. Not read them. Listen to them. They're entertaining. Listen to them. Of course, you can also email us your requests for us what to read next. You can send us the email at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
You can also hit us up on all of the social medias. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. My new favorite social media. Even though Yahoo just bought it and everybody says it's getting ruined, I don't care because I'm having fun posting to APSC's Tumblr.
Everyone go look at it. I posted something funny just now.
I posted something for David this morning, and it's pretty great. I giggled a lot when I read it. It's nothing related to what we're reading. It's Pacific Rim, but man, did I like Pacific Rim. And I know David did too, so I had to post it for him, because it's great!
And the thing I posted actually does have to do with comics, but not what we just read. It has to do with X-Men.
So yeah, we post everything all the time. So just go and follow us. It's fun stuff. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.